back to the American Revolution podcast, episode 21, The Battle of Machias. So first, I want to apologize for not doing an episode last week, but me and the future Mrs. American Revolution podcast decided that we wanted to go visit some friends down in D.C., so we took a drive down there and spent the weekend down there. We did a lot of walking around the National Mall, but we also went to the Smithsonian Museum of the American Indian. And this was one of the most impressive Smithsonian museums I have ever seen. They had all kinds of exhibitions with Native American art. They showed the culture of different tribes. They even had what was known as Cherokee Days. Apparently, during that particular weekend, the people of the Cherokee Nation had come there, and they were doing demonstrations of different crafts and different types of demonstrations of things, and you could either buy their wares or you could sit and talk with them for a while about whatever craft they were working on. So it was a lot of fun, and I think a lot of people were enjoying it. It was really a surprise to us because, you know, we'd passed several museums that were very busy because, you know, they're the popular ones, or there's a couple that have opened in the recent months or years that are still very popular, so they're always very busy. This one, you didn't expect to be super busy, but during this Cherokee Day, it was really packed out, and it was great to see. We were actually going to take some time to talk about Native American enemies and allies for both sides when we get to certain battles and certain time frames during the American Revolution. But for right now, we're going to continue on with our story. And last week, we talked about Ethan Allen, or 2 weeks ago, I should say, we talked about Ethan Allen, that great American folk hero who we've learned a lot about by his own words. Today, though, we're going to learn about a lesser-known battle that happens in what is present-day Maine. See, I learned about this story while living up there working as a park ranger, and I have grown to really love this particular little side note in the American Revolution because it is just one of those little stories that you can always get behind where the underdog overtakes the, you know, the bigger guy. It's a David versus Goliath type tale. So we've been talking about how things were looking in and around Boston. With the loss of Lexington and Concord, Gage is backed up against a wall. Lucky for him, that wall is the ocean. So British Navy is still able to come in and bring supplies and extra men and whatever else Gage might possibly need. Now the Patriots have surrounded Boston, but they're not coming in because it's too close to the Navy's guns. So the Navy's guns are protecting Boston and is able to resupply them. They're getting reinforced on Boston, and Gage is running into a major problem. He's running out of space. You see, with all those extra soldiers, you have to put them somewhere. So where do you put them? Well, the Quartering Act was not a huge success when it had been implemented back in the early 1760s. So why was it going to work now? So they were running out of outer buildings, and the inhabitants of Boston, whether they liked it or not, were having to put up these British soldiers. But even still, they were still running out of room. So Gage had them put their tents up in Boston Common. It became a little tent city. What Gage really needed was lumber. In come Ichabod Jones. A loyalist merchant, Ichabod Jones, cut a deal with Gage that he would take two of his ships, the Unity and the Polly, up north into what we know as present-day Maine, but what at the time was still the Massachusetts colony, to the town of Machias, where he would get some lumber together, and he would bring it back so that he could, so that Gage could build the barracks. Well, Gage, being the ever-cautious man, decided that he should send a armored schooner to accompany the two sloops so to make sure that the Patriots didn't try any funny business with this unarmored transport. The schooner that he chooses is the HMS Margaretta. He puts a young midshipman, James Moore, in command of the ship. With a complement of about 40 men to run the vessel along with any Marines that they might need. Armored schooners usually sported anywhere from 4 to 10 cannon. They ranged in size around 3 to 6 pounders, and they always had some swivel guns on the deck as well. Now, armored schooners were what we would think as little PT boats. They're little attack boats. So they were useful against small vessels like other armored schooners, or they were good against some troops on land. They could also get in up rivers that had low drafts because they didn't have too deep a draft. So the three ships would leave Boston in late May and would arrive in Machias Bay around June 2nd. Now, Jones would head off to the town, going to trade his transports full of flour for lumber. Moore, on the other hand, had a secondary objective. Along with supporting the transports, he also had to go to the HMS Halifax, another armed schooner that had run aground in the bay, and take the guns off of her to bring them back. Might as well not leave any cannons laying around for the meddling patriots, of course. So Jones arrives in town, and he immediately sets to work looking for someone to trade his flour for some lumber. Now, the people in town were Massachusetts colonists. They were not huge fans of the idea of supporting the British. But nonetheless, they decide to put it up to a town meeting. And 4 days later, on the 6th, they come to Jones and say, "We will not trade lumber. We are sorry." Jones says, "I got a better idea." He calls in the Margaretta. It comes within firing distance of town, which quickly changes the tune of the colonists. So the colonists say, "Fine, we'll trade, we'll trade." Well, Jones, for some strange reason, I don't understand this part, and please, if you can venture a guess, please go to the Facebook and venture a guess as to why he does this. But he says, "No, I will not trade with anyone that has denied me trade in the first place. I will only trade with someone who is loyal." Well, the townspeople are put back. "So you want us to trade. We say no. You call in a gunboat and you basically threaten our town, and then you say, 'Know what? I'm not trading with you guys because you guys weren't nice the first time around.' I don't understand. I thought that the whole objective was to get lumber, but I don't understand this little tidbit. It's one of those things in history that you just kind of scratch your head at and you look at why. Like, even it's not like a hindsight thing. Like, in hindsight, maybe I should have done that. No, it's a, why would you do that? You got the lumber. Get out of Dodge." But Jones says no. So he spends time looking around for someone that's going to trade lumber with him. In the meanwhile, the townspeople are devising their own little plan. Well, if Jones doesn't want to cooperate and the schooner is going to threaten the town, might as well capture Jones and more. So Colonel Benjamin Foster of the local militia organizes his men, and they set up a plan to capture the two men while they're at church. So on June 11th, the militia are set up to grab both men while they're sitting in the local church, except they're tipped off. Jones and Moore make a run for it. Jones will try and escape in the woods, but he ends up in Maine woods. There's not really anywhere to go. It's kind of remote. So he will turn himself in 2 days later. Moore, on the other hand, he actually makes it to the Margaretta. He's going to get out of Dodge and get out of Dodge quickly. He's making for the bay. He's bending the sails. The militia have hopped in the Unity and the Polly, and they're giving chase. There's an exchange of gunfire, but the Margaretta actually gets a good headwind and is able to pull away from the two ships. Unfortunately, in the escape, the Margaretta will break her boon and gaff. Now, on schooners, the boon and gaff are these two independently swinging arms that come off of the mainmast that hold the mainsail and direct it to catch the wind. Without those, the mainsail is basically useless. So with only two small directional sails, the Margareta is almost dead in the water. So the Margareta's crew scrambles to start getting her repaired so they can get underway again. The colonists have seen this, and they know that if they attack a cornered ship, she's going to fight. It's that old saying, you never mess with a cornered animal because it will bite. So they head back to town to get the sloops ready for a fight and to get more men. They head back to town. They actually set up the Polly, and they find another sloop, the Falmouth Packet, and get her ready to give chase. They gather up as many men as they can, and the ships are placed under the command of a young captain from the area, Jeremiah O'Brien. Now, in the meantime, the Margareta is also working to get repaired so she can get underway as well. Moore and the crew of the Margareta actually capture another schooner. They take the boom and gaff off of that ship, and for good measure take the captain, a young man by the name of Robert Avery, as a hostage, just so that they have maybe a possible bargaining chip if the colonists catch up to them. Repaired, the Margareta is underway and is pushing hard for the Atlantic Ocean. If she can make it to the ocean, she has the possibility of, if not outrunning the ships, at least dodging them long enough until they can get to friendlier waters. But the Unity is a faster ship and eventually catches the Margareta. Now, the Unity didn't have any guns, so they weren't going to sink the Margareta. And the guns on the Margareta were probably not strong enough to sink the Unity because it was a bigger ship, so the fighting became close quarters. The crew of the Unity uses grapple hooks to latch onto the Margareta and tie themselves together so that they have a ship-to-ship platform that they can fight off of. As they're doing that, the Falmouth Packet catches up, and it too grapples onto the Margareta, so the Margareta is surrounded on both sides by unfriendly militia. The fighting erupts, and there's an exchange of gunfire. In the firefight, Midshipman Moore is actually shot in the chest as he's trying to throw grenades onto the deck of the Unity. In the exchange of gunfire, also the young captain, Robert Avery, is caught in the crossfire, and he is also killed. With the captain dead, the British don't hold out much longer, and they surrender. Moore is taken back to shore, and he dies in town 2 days later. The British had all told 8 killed or wounded, with 13 killed or wounded on the Patriot side. The prisoners were later transferred to the Massachusetts Provincial Congress, and they were later exchanged. Now, Jeremiah O'Brien, on the other hand, gains a lot of recognition leading the Machias Patriots against the British. The Margareta is saved and is renamed the Independence and is going to be used to capture more British ships up in the Machias area. Jeremiah O'Brien is almost like a Patriot pirate. He is capturing ships and becoming a real thorn in the side of the British Navy. The Machias Patriots became such a thorn in the side of the British Navy that they decided to organize an invasion of the area later in the war. The invasion fails, they don't find much, and the Patriots up in Machias continue the good fight. Now, Jeremiah O'Brien, after the war, becomes known as a bit of a hero of the early Navy. And he becomes so much a hero that the Navy, throughout the course of its history, will name no less than 5 ships after the young captain. Now, the Battle of Machias is not this grand-scale battle that we're going to talk about in the coming weeks. What it is a small skirmish between a British armed schooner and a couple of militiamen on some sloops in a bay at the top of the American colonies. But what it is, what it really means, is the first naval battle and the first naval victory for the American colonists. Without having a navy per se yet, it is really quite a victory to take on a British ship and capture it. Now, granted, it's an armed schooner. They're small vessels. But even still, it's a formidable opponent. And British Navy officers are formidable enemies. So you really do have to give credit to these patriots. Now, the plan for the coming weeks is we're going to continue getting ever closer to the Battle of Bunker Hill. Now, I'm going to give a bit of a fair warning. The next couple episodes are going to probably be my last for a little while. You see, it's getting close to that time that is the bane of the existence of most school children, and that is finals time. And being my first responsibility as a teacher is to make sure my students are prepared for finals, I'm thinking that there's going to be a few weeks where I'm not going to be posting any new episodes because I have placed all my time into preparing and setting up their finals for the end of the year. Now, I'm not going to just cut out without warning you guys. There will be an episode next week, don't worry. And we will also have an episode the weeks after that. It's just sometime around May. I just want to give everyone a fair heads up that I'll be taking off to do my finals work. That'll do it for this week. Now, as far as book recommendations go, there isn't really a whole lot written on this little subject. Like I said, you're not going to find this little side note to history in even some of the most expansive works on the American Revolution. It's just a little unknown fight that happens in Maine that the locals really like to hang their hat on. And because I spent 2 years of my life up there, I've really grown attached to Maine in many ways, and I feel that I'm almost like a Mainer light. And for me, this story is one that I can almost, get close to myself because I really do love the state of Maine. I loved living up there, love the people up there, and this story just shows the strength and fortitude of even the earliest settlers in what we know as the North Woods. So that's going to do it for this week. Everyone have a good week, be safe, and as always, keep your powder dry.